Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm net control operator for the Limark Technical Net. For more than 40 years, we've sat in front of our radios and Sunday night at 8 p.m. and talked and chatted and informed each other and learned from each other and hopefully were entertained by each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this particular Sunday night at 8 p.m. Let me drop for a second, and I will return with the usual links. If you would like to reach me via email, one of my many email addresses are mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, that's mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you would like to contact Paul, WS2N, and ask him some space or NASA-related question, and hopefully he'll have an opportunity to answer it on the technical net. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. We also offer a link page of interesting articles, occasionally YouTube. I cut and paste them throughout the week, and I post them on this link page for all to see. And it will stay up for the foreseeable future. If you have a bad case of insomnia and you want to look at something at least I found interesting, you type into your browser, roy.ac2.com, and that should take you to the link page. We also offer an audio stream on the Internet. If you have friends who don't have access to the repeater and would like to listen to our technical net, ask them to type in technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give them an audio stream. Originally, we kept it live for the technical net, but we kept it live the rest of the week because some people asked me to. Once again, I mention if you type in technet.ac2gs.com and you get some kind of a weird error message, check the URL at the top of the web browser and see if there's an HTTPS. If there is, remove the letter S and hit return, and hopefully you'll be able to sync with the audio stream. Also, I'd like to remind people, MikeKC2NKI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who, some of them have moved away from the area over the years. Others, unfortunately, have become silent keys over the years. Okay, let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. As our usual practice these days, I have a short segment at the very top where I tell you a couple of somewhat interesting stories about what's happening in artificial intelligence. As I've mentioned before, for good or for bad, it's in the news and it's going to affect us all, so we should be aware of it. So we will discuss that and give everyone an opportunity to either remark, comment upon the news, or ask any AI-related story question. Usually, sometimes some people have a couple of questions on at the beginning of the technical net. Other times, it's kind of silent. It takes people a little time to warm up. But later on during the night, we inevitably end up talking about some aspect of artificial intelligence. So we'll do that. When we're done with that, we go to the main segment, questions, comments, and topics of interest. I will ask people to hit the push to talk, give me their first name, their call sign, whether it is an amateur radio-related question or topic or a science and technology topic. And we'll try and do it in some reasonable order. Hopefully that should take us approximately to 10:15, and Paul, WS2N, will join us for the SpaceNet report. His segment should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If the repeater is working the way it's supposed to, and my shack is working the way it's supposed to, and I'm working the way I'm supposed to, and I don't get kicked off of all talk too many times. So that's the plan. So let me drop a second, and I will return to tell you the little stories about AI for this week. first on my list, I just want to mention that NVIDIA, which has very often been described as the shovel maker for the gold, gold rush, said a really strange thing recently. He announced the ultimate in artificial intelligence is something called AGI, artificial general intelligence. Supposedly, that's a lot of people have taken to define it as the time that artificial intelligence becomes sentient, becomes self-aware, becomes living almost, and is able to do all the magic things and tell us how to live our lives and cure for cancer and all kinds of things. When that might happen, if that might happen, a lot of people have a lot of opinions. But Jensen Huang, the guy who runs NVIDIA, announced that we have already attained AGI. So I could only assume that he's gone a little crazy. Because we haven't. There's no suggestion. Unless you take AGI as a marketing term and not having anything to do with artificial intelligence technology. So that seems to me to be the most important bit of AI news of the past week. But there are lesser ones. OpenAI stopped providing its AI models the cursor at Elon Musk. SpaceX acquired the coding company. OpenAI showed first test results for Jalapeno, its new internal inference chip, designed to reduce reliance on its hardware. Google's DeepMind division announced that the new AI weather models can forecast severe hurricanes a full day earlier and more accurately than standard physics-based computer models. Anthropic released a research preview of a model hardware, which is a rule book to help AI agents safely control physical tools and lab equipment. According to Reuters, companies like OpenAI, Anthropic, Microsoft, and Google called for an urgent defense surge to stop an expected rise in AI-powered cyber attacks. And Sony Music and Warner Music sued Anthropic, accusing the company of using copyrighted lyrics and text without permission during a model training. So those are the bits and pieces of AI news for the last week. If you have any comments or questions on AI, that's the time. Hit the push to talk and ID yourself. Okay, I guess no one has any particular comments about any of these stories, but once again, as I mentioned before, very likely an hour or hour and a half from now, we'll be talking about some aspect of AI. Anyway, we'll now move on to the main segment of the Technical Net, questions, comments, topics. Anyone who has any, free to hit that push to talk, give me your first name, your call sign, and whether it's science and technology or amateur radio related.
And to exchange after everybody.
Wes recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
Kilowatt 2, November Echo.
Sam recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Once again, I want to remind everyone that this is a net, and we're doing dialogues. We're not doing monologues. This is not the Johnny Carson show. So you make it a better technical net by participating in it. And maybe you have some questions or some topics that interest you that you know a lot about and would like to share with us out, and you'd like to hear other people's opinion. So I give you a reasonably good opportunity to do that, and I hope you take advantage of it because it makes for a better that in mind. Anyone else want to put anything down on the list for tonight?
And to ZEA, no traffic.
Okay. Well, then, I guess we'll go You know, we'll give people an opportunity to ask questions later on. Sam, what do you have for me tonight?
And one more sign in, please, and one YDY, no traffic.
Okay, Hank, I put you down.
Okay, Roy, this is K2NE. I have two questions. One I may have asked you before, but you don't mind answering again. I realize with the antenna tuner, it tunes your antenna, it helps reduce the SWR for transmitting. Does it have any effect on receiving?
Yes, it has a reciprocal effect on receiving. This is why sometimes when people don't have a SWR meter, they're advised to listen to the background noise as they tune their antenna tuner. And although you can't really fine-tune it too well, but as you approach a visual of one-to-one, you should get a louder signal, and the noise in the background should get louder as well.
Thank you. Good. Good question in my mind. Okay. Could you explain, if you don't mind, the purpose of a shift and notch on a receiver, what their functions are, basically?
I'm not exactly sure what you're alluding to. Notches are usually about filters. So sometimes if you have interference that has a very, very sharp frequency, you can apply a notch filter to kind of get rid of it without affecting higher frequency audio and lower frequency audios. I'm not quite sure what you're alluding to. There's a lot of things that can be shifted in radio, so I'm not quite sure what you're alluding to when it comes to shifts.
I'm referring to using a receiver where you have a shift knob as well as the notch knob. So the notch knob, I understand. I was wondering if you're familiar, you can answer the question about a shift filter or how that might function in a receiver.
Okay, so that's another way of modifying your bandwidth. So rather than introduce a particular frequency with a small range of variation around it, this just shifts the entire bandwidth either a little bit higher, so you get some of the lower frequency information. If you're having a noise problem or artifacts that are low frequency, that's the quickest, easiest way of shifting away from that. Or if the high end is causing more noise background artifact, by shifting your bandwidth to the lower frequency, you get some of your high frequency signals off.
Would that affect both transmitting and receiving at the same time?
Usually, most radios, I think, these things operate on the receive. Better radios are capable of adjusting bandwidth for transmission, but less expensive ones will only apply the shifts and such to your receiver. And notches certainly is a purely receiver-based situation. There's no particularly good reason to notch an audio frequency that you're transmitting because, you know, your signal, it doesn't have a noise in it. It's all you.
Thank you very much, Roy. Standing by. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you, as always, for your participation. It is appreciated. Hank, how are you, Hank? I never received that email.
You didn't receive it because I didn't send it.
Hank, are you okay out there? I hope nothing happened to Hank's transceiver. Are you out there?
There's a different radio later, and one more.
heard a bit of that, but only a bit.
Boy, when you have a chance, this is K2NE. I do have another question for you.
Okay, Sam. Well, let me see if I can establish contact with Hank. Hank, are you out there? Is your radio okay? Okay, well, I think we're going to give Hank an opportunity to figure out what's going on with the radio and find out what Sam's question is, and then get back to Hank again. Sam, what's your third question?
People were talking about going on 2-meter simplex. What is that? How does it work? How do you accomplish it? What's the difference between simplex and, I guess, using the repeater in general? Do you get the idea of what I don't know?
Yes, simplex is rather simple. It's the old-fashioned way that you communicate on 10 meters and most other places without a repeater. Usually it's 520, not 520 on 2 meters is the kind of universal calling frequency. And, you know, 146.520. And it's just one-to-one communication without benefit of repeater. Point-to-point contact. You know, people do it all the time. Theoretically, you use 520 as the calling frequency once you establish contact with someone else that you're talking back and forth to directly. You can move off the primary calling frequency for simplex operation to a secondary one. Why people don't bother doing that? Primarily because people are kind of lazy, but also because although simplex uncommon, there's usually not that many simplex conversations going on in the same location. So they can get away with using the calling frequency rather than moving off up to a secondary one.
You actually call CQ on 146.520, which you call CQ?
Yes, you can call CQ. I guess some people just ID themselves, you know, this is AC2GS. But, yeah, you can use CQ.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Sam, once again. Hank, are you there yet? Well, I don't know what happened to Hank. I guess we'll move on and try him again later. Let me ask if anyone else has any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight. Please hit that push to talk. Give me your call sign, your first name, and whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology. One more time. Let me ask if anyone has any further questions or topics for discussion tonight. And once again, this is a net. This is not a monologue. This is not the Johnny Carson show. I'm not that funny. And, you know, we benefit from participation. So if there's anyone else who has a question or a topic that's sticking in their mind and they would like to expand upon it, hit that push to talk and ID. Okay. No takers yet. Hopefully later on in the night there'll be some more people. Otherwise, it'll be another short technical net. You know, these are the lazy, hazy days of summer, you know. Before you know it, it'll be the fall. But we'll see. Wesley, what do you got for us tonight?
Okay. Enter HGN. The button is kind of explosive. Take a seat. So you mentioned NVIDIA, and there was no comment. I had a comment, so I'm going to express that comment right now. The title is America AI / NVIDIA Jetson Orin, chips that are powering Russian killer drones now. And I have a short version before I go to the long one. So, world was waiting 13.8 billion years till machine made by human animal start to kill its creator. Humans totally, so it is killing humans totally by itself. American AI, NVIDIA, Jetson, Orin chips, now power Russian killer drones. Russian drone programmed to hit a target, calculated, but due to the shortage of fuel, it is better to look around for a new target. The drone autonomously spotted house with propane tanks and changed the road killing two Ukrainians. Since we described the situation, I'm going to go further. Let me stop. Okay. Chips of NVIDIA found in Russian killer drones are capable of autonomously choosing a target. No operator is involved. Russia didn't even try to scramble the American AI operation in it. The system used artificial intelligence only in the last several hundred yards of drone flight, making them impervious to radio signal jamming. The circuit board on which the NVIDIA chip was installed was stamped made in China. NVIDIA says it does not sell the devices in Russia, but they are widely available on the resale market. Russian weapon is new step in use of AI in combat. Earlier, AI-guided drones had a human-in-the-loop safety button that required a live pilot to confirm the target. Those fully autonomous AI-guided systems need no operators. The miniature NVIDIA computer used in fully autonomous AI-guided drones is an expensive model designed for civilian robotics and machine vision application, according to the company. A drone with one of the systems, NVIDIA Jetson Orin, killed three people in attack in Zaporizhzhia on July 6th. The company has said that it cannot track such secondary sales. NVIDIA cited a Japanese manufacturer, Musashi, that trained a Jetson computer to identify defect in welding and other areas of vehicle gearboxes. The computer replaced human inspectors whose work NVIDIA called repetitive, stressful, and not very engaging. So now we have a killer drone. Any comment? And I wonder what would be your comment, Dr. Roy. Back to you.
Well, I mean, it's inevitable. The Russians are very good at getting stuff that they're not supposed to have. And plus, it was manufactured in China. I don't think this is that difficult to import stuff from China. You know, all the other stuff that China ships them. It's probably somewhat primitive. I don't know if I'd exactly call it artificial intelligence, but it's recognition, image recognition. There are a lot of unsophisticated programs that don't utilize sophisticated chips that are capable of doing that for surveillance videos for 10, 15 years. So not that incredibly special, but again, it's not surprising. You know, they smuggle all kinds of stuff into Russia, despite our wish that they wouldn't be able to.
Andrei Chin, so you use two terms. Russians are quite good, but then sort of primitive. So I would like to find out what is likely primitive and what is so good. Let's say we have a theoretical here who is spilling all around. And we have a theoretical here who, during the Second World War, was delivered American armory and American machinery because they didn't even know how to read and write most of the country in their communist system. Let me drop. Okay. And what they did is they used American machinery to create a copy with imperial threats. All the machinery and transmitters and everything that America gave them, because they couldn't even make a metric one. Savages. So, of course, we talk about theoretical guys. And they found that they could make a copy of American cars. So made a number of them, but not only American, European. Copy, boot to bolt, the same. So they are good in what? Stealing? And they are not good in primitive in what? Question to you, Dr. Roy.
Well, no, I'm talking about artificial intelligence. I mean, the chips that they're using are not anything close to the chips that NVIDIA is making billions and billions of dollars selling to data warehouses. These are somewhat rudimentary, but the Chinese are getting better and better, and, you know, you could say that it's from stolen intellectual property, but they seem to be improving it at times. The present-day sodium rechargeable batteries that ATL, I think is the company, or IATL, is making large quantities of that. We have no means to do that. Something like lithium iron phosphate, which most hams are familiar with as a rechargeable battery technology, is pretty much all of them are made in China. Now, you know, again, how much of this is stolen intellectual property? How much is it, you know, where they hired some brilliant people and gave them a lot of money? They certainly are spending a lot of equipment, probably more money than they can afford to, in industries to kind of show us off with battery technology and in some ways robotics and other ways computers. They have redesigned their own AI chips that utilize a different architecture. Which is, reasonably, interesting thing that they've done. They have developed lithography that almost approaches the Western world's ability. So, you know, don't completely downgrade them. If you have a lot of money, a lot of time, they can do some interesting things these days.
Yeah, I'm trying to find out how much primitive is primitive. So we're talking about somehow, somewhat primitive. What is the degree of primitivism of theoretical country that is based on dictatorship, stealing, theft, and concentration lagers? And one of them, it's not that it was one, it was many of them. But one of the types of those called Sharashka. And that Sharashka was for the scientists. So after the Second World War, German engineers, German scientists that were on the American side were able to come legally to the United States and work with American science to create something. In Russia, they were used as a slave and then eventually murdered. But we're talking about theoretical country. So I'm going to get to the primitivism of the regime. The country that murdered about 40 million of their own, not 40,000, 40 million of their own since 1917. And in 1917, they decided, in that theoretical country, that they're going to murder the czar, the king. But they didn't do that only. What they did is they murdered the czar, his wife, his children, his servants, pets of the children, of the children, and pets of the servants. Okay, so I will be enough for the theoretical country that we're talking about. As I said, this material will be explosive. Now, the second one is confused quite much. MIT explains the 12 possible endings for AI. So I sent the email with the video to Dr. Roy and Paul. And I was thinking if they want to take and comment that video. But then there was no response, and I decided to take a look at it again eventually to find out what's going on. Okay. And I believe I understand the concept. The man is searching for the team for the new video. The conflict between artificial intelligence and the humans appears to be a compelling narrative to explore. He has produced a diagram illustrating plausibility of an Armageddon scenario that could eradicate human life from the planet. MIT publication seems to be pretty credible when they point fingers at AI as like reason for human extinction. The speaker was attempting to persuade the audience of his doomsday scenario, starting with historical facts like, well, these facts are pretty much terrifying. The U.S. accidentally dropped 4 thermonuclear bombs on Spain in 1966. The warhead with an explosive power 100 times of that bomb dropped on Hiroshima was carefully winched from the depth 2,850 feet out of Mediterranean Sea and delicately lowered on the USS Petrel. 3 out of 4 safety pins in one bomb broke. One tiny pin away from potentially killing millions. Once it was on board, officers painstakingly cut into the thermonuclear device, causing to disarm. It was only then that everyone could breathe a sigh of relief. The last of 4 hydrogen bombs that U.S. had accidentally dropped on Spain had been recovered. And the second one. January 24, 1961, B-52 bomber broke apart mid-air over Goldsboro, North Carolina, dropping 2 Mark 39 nuclear bombs. Fortunately, one bomb was only one safety switch away from detonation, while the other did not detonate due to its safety mechanism function problem. Then the author of the video talks about Toby Ord, the utopian philosopher, who advocates using reason and evidence to improve people's lives. Well, the guy actually says everyone from you should give away 10% of your income to find the evidence and then create your reasoning. So that would be the reason to spend that money. He also brings a Nobel Prize laureate, Jeffrey Hinton, who left position at Google to openly discuss the risks and dangers associated with artificial intelligence. Hinton had voiced
Cobra Buster.
Oh my God.
Okay. Hinton had voiced worries about AI during its development. So that would be eventually getting to the article which they say about MIT, that eventually nuclear war, global pandemic, or AI may put in danger human life in next 10 years. Then catastrophic climate would be 1,000 years and asteroid 10,000 years. So that would be if we don't get to overpopulation. What is your comment, Dr. Wright, and to exist?
I don't know what to tell you, Wes. It's kind of navel-gazing. I've read the best science fiction regarding all of these things. I'm not that worried about overpopulation. If you kind of look into it, a lot of countries are kind of, their population is dwindling and might just kind of get arrested. China it has a fraction of the population it did in the 60s, and they would give anything reverse their one-child rule that got them into part of this mess. Russia, unfortunately, is the same, except that they're throwing their young men into Ukraine to be, you know, their population is going to... A lot of large countries that we take for granted as being highly populated are losing a significant portion. I think India isn't having that problem, but they're the exception. So, you know, if you went back into the 70s, yeah, everyone and their brother would be talking about Malthus and overpopulation. Right now, if anything, the crisis coming to many countries is underpopulation. Japan is losing its population. China is losing its population. Russia is losing its population. You know, I mean, countries that are not allowing for immigration, apparently the trend will continue.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. Okay, and to XGM. Well, the explanation given fails to consider how scientific progress enhances life comfort while simultaneously diminishing or eliminating the dire sectors of trade and profession. So, my focus is, let's say, I'm just giving an example, scientific and technical aspects of lowering the delivery costs related to electricity. So then we can say, how much energy is lightning strike? Well, it's 5 gigajoules of energy, and that's enough to power one small town of 200,000 people for one day. And each bolt can release energy equivalent to 1 billion joules. So if we say that we have approximately 25 million lightning strikes in USA, and we would be able to get that power to use for humans, then we would be able to impact metallurgy and plenty of other businesses, decreasing copper wire by 90%, pools for 90%, and eventually, if we find the technology that is able to eliminate natural gas, then we have impact on all trade. So electrical farmers and firms like Con Edison, T-Span in the entire world may face quite difficult time. I'm trying to over-exaggerate that just to give momentum to the discussion, if there is any. I'm not saying that it's true. Dr. Ray, back to you.
Okay, but again, it's, you know, I mean, if anyone wastes their time kind of, you know, I mean, intellectual conversation's one thing. Sitting there and worrying about the gas company going out of business is totally a different thing. I mean, a lot of things have to change for that to take effect. You know, I mean, everyone talks about vision, fusion, being 20 years in the future for the last 60 or 70 years. You know, I mean, everyone would be thrilled if we could replace the size of energy storage that we have with things like fusion. But yeah, and no one's going to be crying about the loss of the utility. You know, I mean, no one was really that worried about the coal industry until the present administration. So, you know, I mean, that's all well and good and probably useful for some conversations, but I'm not going to lose any sleep for the fear that, you know, 100 years from now, the gas utility might not be what it is.
Okay, Richie. Well, I remember when I was on one of the speakers on International Conference of Optics in Denver, Colorado. I heard for the second time that's what my father told me before. When there are two people, each one will try to take 180% opposite opinion just to make discussion going. So there is a technology that I'm working on it. And I asked a few mathematics professors from Hunter College and Johnson University. And they told me, well, if something like that is going to happen, then from our calculation, our population could begin 18 years from now. Not 80 years, 18 years from now. Because of comfort of life. Right now, Chinese are allowed to have a second child. And we are not worried because people cannot afford to have many children. The life is simply too difficult and too expensive. Is that true? What do you think about it, Dr. Roy?
Well, people have all kinds of intellectual and cultural reasons. I mean, China never had a reason to overpopulate except that they were mostly a cultural country, and usually that's cheap labor. You know, you have as many sons as you can to work the farm, and you don't have to pay them. You can just room and board them. But, you know, I mean, unfortunately, you have a better educated Chinese population, and unemployment is rather high, and they don't have a lot of actual social programs. So it's very difficult for the Chinese to wrap their head around having more than one kid. You have one kid, but that when you get old and feeble, they take care of you and they pass down that thing. If you have, you know, three or four or five, that's too much of a good thing for them, and they couldn't afford it anyway. So there's a lot of economic problems. They revoked the one child law. You know, people have a kind of cultural inertia, and they've decided that it's too much work. They're usually taking care of their parents for the reason I said earlier, and you know, taking care of a kid, and everything costs money, and money is not that readily available. So the Chinese population is still shrinking. Like I said, there's a lot of developing countries or developed countries that have diminishing the population simply because it takes a lot of work to raise children. And there's no benefit like there was in cultural times where they're back basically free laborers.
Okay, interesting. If we take India, Pakistan, China, you already have 60%, over 60% of the world population. Now we say that Chinese people could afford second child. But if we're talking about reasoning, we're talking why we do not have rapid growth of population, we have diminishing population. Because life is too expensive. And it wasn't. And also, we take the time after the Second World War, when many soldiers came from the war, we had entire new population of baby boomers. And then we didn't have... I remember when John, KC2WGP, was telling me that in the 50s, one father that had a job, not a business, just a job, could afford 3 children, wife, and pets, and a house for himself. And it was American standard. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Yeah, well, that was the days of the middle class. The days of very wealthy people had a very high tax margin. There was a time, especially in the Eisenhower administration, where some companies would rather invest in themselves than increase the salary for their executive offices, simply because the state would simply tax most of it to the state and remove it from the business. And the you know, presidents and vice presidents and CEOs and such would rather give the money to their own business for investment. That thing is a complete past. You got CEOs that are making, 500 times more than their poorest wage earner in the company. So we are losing our middle class. If you look at the demographics, more and more people are kind of squeezing into the lower economic situation. So, it's very difficult to, talk or just look it up. The average age, I think, of buying your first house in the 60s was something like 30. It's 45 or so. They're talking about providing mortgages that last so long that you don't actually ever own your house, basically just living it until you pass away, and then the mortgage company forecloses on it. So, looking at the economics in this country is kind of depressing. People our age made well off. Young people who can barely get an entry job these days or have to work at McDonald's, it's really tough for them to living and to get anywhere close to the economic story that their parents or grandparents had. It's not fair, but life ain't fair.
Okay, interesting. The video that I'm talking about introduced the idea of new species, the intelligent machine. And the remark in that video says, which is true, actually. Everything that is extinct was alive on planet Earth. And it aligns with the fact that about 99% of all species that have ever existed on planet Earth are now extinct. So not only people, not only human beings, everything that we have right now is just 1% out of 100%, 1% that survived. And we had already 2 accidents from American side. We don't know how many of them we had from Russian side or any other side that almost made a humongous impact on that 1%. So right now is the time for Operation Starship in Christmas Island. I believe Paul would be the best to talk about it. Starship 4, if Paul is available and ready.
Hello?
Paul, are you available?
W.S. Glenn, I'm not sure about the question, Wes.
Starship in Christmas Island, the Starship 40, Talking about the float and about the transporting whatsoever. Back to you.
Guy, I mentioned that last week. Yeah, that's where it, that's where they dragged it to. They towed it after launching and winding up in the Indian Ocean. They wound up dragging it to Christmas Island, and from there they're gonna put it on a barge and eventually get it back to Texas in about 2 or 3 months. But what's interesting is that this is gonna be a special event station there. Special event station in Christmas Island. Maybe if they don't leave anytime soon, maybe the special event station will get a chance to see this thing. They've done that before on Christmas Island. So it's a well-desired location for the expeditions. But yeah, back to you, Wes.
Yeah, I was under the impression that the richest person in the world would have landing platform. I was able to read about Forte, F-O-R-T-E, which is kind of very much unusual ship, very much submerged, partially submersible. You don't mind to say a few words about it? Back to you.
Well, the thing floated, so it's got enough buoyancy to float. It never sunk after many, many weeks at sea. So, but yeah, I don't think they're going to tow it back like that. They're going to put it on a barge.
Okay, so what I've read is, we're talking about humongous ship that has 1/5 of the ship from the nose, from the very nose of it, elevated about 6 to 10 floors over the ship. So we're talking about 20 floors altogether. And then the rest of it is very much shallow with 2 yellow posts at the end of it, which actually weren't yellow when Forte was rented. And I thought that Forte belongs to, it's not Forte, that this ship belongs to Elon Musk, but it looks like it is not. So they can submerge that flat landing platform of the ship, actually the ship by itself. And so the Starship 40 actually float over it to those yellow poles that's supposed to hold it. Am I right? Back to you, Andrew Chin.
I haven't seen anything on that yet. I'll have to look for it. So, yeah, I don't know what he's going to do with this thing. When he gets it back, he'll probably leave it on a site somewhere so people could look at it. I mean, it's got no value. They're not going to fly those engines again, the 6 engines. So 3 of them were designed for, you know, for atmosphere flight, and then the other 3 are for vacuum flight. But you know, they're all toast. But what they'll do is they'll go over it with a fine tooth comb and see how everything fared during the flight. They will do that. So that's going to help, you know, future developments of the engines. And they plan on making thousands of them. So we'll see. Back to you. I'll look for the information on how they're going to get it back. WS2N.
That's right, Jim. So I understood that Forte, F-O-R-T-E, Forte, was built in 2012, and it's rented by Elon Musk. And right now it's under flag of Malta. And belongs to Pascals. Pascals is a Dutch heavy lifting company that has plenty of them, 650 ships, and operates in 75 countries in 6 continents. Those ships are submersible. That means they can put the water in and lower themselves till the platform, the lower part of it. So we're talking about ship that 1 foot from the north side is always over the water, and the rest of it could be low down. And actually, I saw the video when the Starship, when that water was lowering down, so it looked like the nose was only exposed, and then Starship Warrior was actually swim into the cradle, and that was mounted, and then that ship again lift itself, so pump out the water. And I also learned about chip lock. Let me drop. Okay. The chip plug, I had no idea about the existence of the chip plug until I spoke to one of the ham radio operators who was working in marine industry for many years. So it's a phenomenon of registering ships on the plug not related to the ship owner. The reason for this practice is that the difference resulting from tax law, registration law, and other laws, also insurance. The second reason for sailing under other flags is to protect ships in the event of armed and economic conflicts. And this phenomenon began in 16th century and only intensified in 1920s till today. So it was kind of interesting experience. Now, there are dangers, as I said, this section is going to be explosive. So we have a Christmas island that has 550 meters of water. So the ship cannot be anchored. Okay. There is a very little of shallow area next to the Christmas island, because Christmas Island is just the mount, the tip of the mount. And they want to get with that to United States of America, to Brownsville, Texas. And if they try to do it to Panama Canal, they have to pay the fees. If they try to do it to Suez Canal, around the Cape of Good Hope, they risking Houthis, and I'm not sure if they're gonna go, because if you look at the map where that mount is, it looks like road around South Africa, around the Africa to Brownsville would be the best road. Do you know which way they're gonna go? Back to you.
I have no idea. No. I don't know. Well, look, you know, like I said, we'll look into it when they stop pulling this thing from Christmas Island all the way back to Texas. You know, he's got enough money to do this. You know, I thought originally they were just going to scuttle it, you know, put a big hole in it. And,